Welcome to the Level Up English podcast, the best place to come to practice the English language, learn about the British accent and culture, with me, your host, Michael Lavers. Hello everyone, hello English learners, how are you all doing? Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Michael and today is a special episode because we have another teacher chat. Today we will be talking with Anna from English Like a Native. You can find Anna on her website, englishlikeanative.co.uk. YouTube channel is the same, English Like a Native. Podcast as well, the English Like a Native podcast. She and I also did an episode over there together, so maybe check that one out after this one if you are interested in finding out more about her as well and her podcast style. And finally, on Instagram, you can find Anna at British English Pro. British English Pro. And I was actually very surprised because we were talking on Instagram before, and I went over to her YouTube channel and checked it out, and she's almost got 1 million subscribers. So maybe you'd like to be one of those people to help out Anna get to 1 million subscribers. I'm sure she'd be very happy about that. She'll get there in no time anyway. So today the topic we're talking about is passions and interests. So I'm going to be quizzing Anna or asking Anna a little bit about her interests and maybe whether she would consider these to be passions. We're going to be discovering what she's into, what she likes. We'll be using lots of good vocabulary as well. And this is going to be really useful for you because it's stuff that you can use all the time in everyday conversation. So the vocabulary we'll be using will help you talk about your hobbies and your interests. And I know it's going to be useful for you. And don't forget, I do keep 100% of the transcripts over on Level Up English. So if you're a member over there, you can view everything we're saying in text. And even better, it actually highlights the text as we are reading. It's a really nice way to improve your listening, your reading, and your vocabulary as well. And I usually include like bonus activities, maybe a quiz, some vocabulary, worksheets, or something like that. I try to give as much value as I can to the members. So if that's interesting for you, you can go to levelupenglish.school and then click on the members button at the top of the page. I don't want to delay anymore, so let's get right into the episode with Anna. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. Hello, English learners. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm here today with Anna from englishlikeanative.co.uk. How are you doing, Anna?
I'm doing really well, thank you. It's a bit cold this morning, but I'm here with my very large cup of tea.
Me too. Cheers.
Cheers.
But yeah, it's very nippy this morning. I found it was like below freezing when I woke up. So I was covered in blankets next to the heating.
Yeah, -4 where I am.
Where are you then? I don't actually know.
I'm in Greater London. It's actually Surrey, technically, but I think anyone who's within the M25, which is a major motorway that encircles London, then you're considered to be in Greater London if you're within that motorway. And so we are close to the M25, technically Surrey, but Greater London. How about you?
Right now I'm in Cornwall. I'm a bit surprised because normally London's a bit warmer, but it's -2 here. So a little bit, well, not much difference, to be honest. But
Yeah, okay. We're having a cold snap this week.
Yes, a cold snap. How would you describe that for the listeners?
A short period of time where the weather drops, the temperature drops down. So I think yesterday or a couple of days ago, we were around 7-8 degrees, whereas today we're in minus figures. So that's dropped down quite quickly and it will stay low for about a week. So it's a short period of time of very cold weather, a cold snap, or sometimes we say a cold spell.
Yes, that's what I would have said, cold spell, I think. I don't know how regional that would be. But yes, I'm already putting you on the spot, but you're doing great. I'm sure my listeners might know you because I was actually quite surprised to see how many subscribers you had on YouTube. It was almost 1 million now, isn't it?
Wow, it's still way off a million. I think the thing is with subscriber counts is it is just a vanity metric. It looks good, but it doesn't really mean much in reality because, yes, I have, I think it's 860,000 subscribers, but my videos only tend to get around 10,000 views. So I'm not like huge in YouTube terms. But people, you know, pick up learning a skill and then drop it later on, don't they? They don't keep up with it. So they might have subscribed to me 6 years ago, but decided actually English isn't for them anymore and they want to learn Spanish or something else, or take up the piano perhaps. So
I think I have a lot of the same. Yeah. I imagine you're like me, where engagement is much more important, like comments and messages is more important than subscribers at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think anyone who is an educator online, what we really want to do is make a difference to people's lives, as well as make a living ourselves. But we want to be able to make sure that we are impacting people. That's why we do it in such a public forum. We want to reach people around the world and make a difference to people. And so as long as people are consuming and enjoying and interacting with our content, then that is what makes us happy, keeps us getting up in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So my point was that I'm sure many of the listeners might have heard of you already, but for those who haven't, could you give us a little introduction? We know you're in Surrey, but like, what do you do these days? Why did you get into it? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I'm Anna from English Like a Native. Most people would find me on YouTube, but I am also on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you know, all the major platforms. And I try to make learning English fun. I don't come from an English language academic background. I come from more of the voice background. So people might know me more for pronunciation and accent work. I started out myself as a performer, as an actress, studying voice, doing a lot of voice coaching with some of the top coaches in like the West End. And then I moved into teaching myself because I had a skill for being able to hear voice and accents and differences in the way people spoke. And I started doing a little bit of accent coaching and then elocution, which was almost more like speech therapy for a while. I was working with children who had difficulties with speaking, either stutters or lisps, helping them. And I found that really interesting. Then moved into singing and teaching singing. So I had a deep understanding of voice production. And that's where my relationship with YouTube started, because I started teaching singing. Some of my students know me as a singing teacher and then find me as an English teacher. And they're like, what? This is crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I started teaching singing and then brought my elocution and pronunciation work online as well, because I was doing more of that offline. And that naturally led into teaching English, because many people who want to work on pronunciation and communication are non-native English speakers. And so they start asking, what does this phrase mean? And tell me about this grammar point and how does this sentence structure work? And so I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can work this out and help you with this. And so my angle of teaching is very much from a kind of natural way of learning rather than an academic way. Yeah, I try and make it fun. I'm always experimenting. I listen to my audience and to see what works. And so that's kind of what I do, just try and do fun, interesting ways of teaching English.
That's really exciting. That's such a unique, interesting journey to get to where you are today. I didn't expect that at all.
How did you get into teaching online?
For me, it was quite a conscious decision, where when I left sixth form, which is kind of like high school, you know, for the listeners, I worked as a gardener for a few years. That was like my passion, my hobby at the time.
Wow.
But I couldn't do that for my life. You know, it was too much to spend my whole life working outside in the cold winters. So I just went traveling and I had to think about what I wanted to do in my life and the direction I wanted to go in. It was like a turning point in my life. And I just decided, I've always loved learning languages, and English is the only language that I'm fairly good at, being a bit native. So yeah, I just decided to start teaching online, specifically because of the freedom it gives you, and the student as well, of course. It's flexible for both parties.
Have to tidy your house.
Yes, I'm glad you can't see the whole room here. But I think, of course, for students, it can sometimes be hard to hear or distinguish between different accents. So I'm curious, with your background, again, apologies for putting you a bit on the spot.
Oh, no.
Is there anything that you can tell from my accent? Like, I told you that I'm in Cornwall now, but is there anything that you could guess, like features of the way I'm talking as to where I'm from or anything I'm saying differently than you?
Yeah, well, I would guess that you're from somewhere either Midlands or North.
Everyone says that. Mm.
Yeah, because you have very subtle like features in your accent, but I'd have to specifically listen to you a little bit more to pick something out. But
I mean, is there anything specifically that made you think that, or is it just a feeling you can't quite put it into words?
So, I have to try and pick out your vowels, but so there you just said can't, I can't, which for me would be more like Bristolian. And you don't do your THs often, you do your Fs instead of a TH.
Yeah, I can't do them.
which is definitely more kind of a regional thing. But then you say can't, you give a nice long R.
That was more for show that time.
Oh, I see. Okay, so let me talk to you a little bit and I'll have a listen to you. Do you prefer, when you have a wash, do you prefer a bath or a shower?
I think I know what you want me to say. I normally have a shower, but
right, okay.
I haven't had a bath for a while.
Yeah, see, they're short, but you lengthened it, bath. For a while, rather than bath, which would be more kind of the RP Southern. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would hazard a guess at being somewhere from around Bristol.
Oh, that's interesting. Or... Is it? Yeah.
No, go on.
So, I actually grew up in Cornwall. So, I guess
right. That's interesting.
I don't sound like my parents do, but
no.
I guess I have features of some Cornish. Like, it's very Cornish to say like bath or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Some things I just can't say, like TH sound has always been tough for me. But yeah. Interesting. Some people say I'm sound like I'm from the North. So it's interesting to hear your
I think it's
opinion.
Because you speak slowly and clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because you're a teacher online. People find it with me. I'm from Manchester. I was brought up around Manchester. And if you heard me when I was a teenager, I'm unrecognizable now with how I speak. Because I used to have quite a strong Lancashire accent, and now only people with a very tuned in ear who catch me when I'm tired, or depending on who I'm talking to, sometimes it slightly adjusts, but only you know, those few people can pick out that I'm actually from Manchester. So yeah, I think when people are teachers, they tend to just generally speak a little clearer, a little slower, and that makes it harder to pinpoint someone's heritage.
Yeah, and it's not, I guess it's not a conscious thing, is it? But naturally, you just do speak more clearly. Like with my friends, I might say, come on, speak better or something like that. But if it's on a podcast, I'll say, yeah, speak more clearly. I'll try and enunciate a bit more. And it's not really a conscious thing, but it can't be helped.
Yeah, and it's the same. It's what I call a telephone voice. It's what you do if you're working in an office and you pick up the phone to a potential customer or client, you automatically speak a little clearer and a little slower, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, students and listeners often ask me like how I'm speaking in this. Am I slowing down or anything like that? I don't think I am really, but I might be doing that telephone voice a bit.
Yeah.
I would call it like a radio voice. Like when you know you're being recorded, you cannot speak totally naturally because you know someone's going to listen to it later.
Yeah, you're speaking for a broad audience. It's your presenting voice.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, nice that we see eye to eye on that we have a similar view. Okay, so you've had like many different experiences in the past with teaching and pronunciation and all this other stuff. What is it that you like now about your job and what you do? What's your favorite part of your daily work?
So I miss the stage and I miss performing, but I have complete control over, relatively complete control over what I do. So I'm my own boss and I rule my own diary, as it were. In the past, as an actor, I would be waiting for my agent to call me to tell me which jobs she had decided I should go up for. And then I would have to audition. So I'd have to do a lot of work to prepare songs or monologues or bits of script that I then have to travel somewhere, sometimes, you know, a long way, to then do this little performance, to then be judged and told I wasn't right for the role, and I'd put all that work in, done all that travel, and nothing would come of it. And so I'd have no control. And it was this feeling of, you know, at one time I got a phone call that told me, you're now going to go and live on a cruise ship for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
That was a life-changing moment. And so sometimes as an actor, you can't plan anything. You can't plan a holiday without worrying about a job coming in. You can't tell your parents what you're going to do for Christmas because you just don't know if you're going to be doing panto or not, unless you're booked up way in advance. And you don't know if the money's coming in or not. So you're always worried about whether you're going to be able to pay your bills next month. Mm-hmm. And so there's just this lack of knowing what's coming. I used to think that was exciting because you don't know what's coming. Something exciting could happen next week. But you get to a point where you have children, because I've got two young children. You have, you know, a mortgage to pay and responsibility. So suddenly all that excitement of not knowing actually becomes very scary. And so what I love about what I do now is I still have relative freedom, but I have more control over my diary, what's happening. If money is tight, then there are things that I can do to make sure that the money is going to come in to cover my bills. And so that security is what I love. And you know, like I said about touching people around the world and being able to impact their lives in a positive way is so much more than I ever could have asked for. I used to love seeing how, as a teacher face to face, I'd have an impact on my students. But now I do that, you know, tenfold. It's so many people around the world now are benefiting from the work that I've done. And that's, you can't beat that when you get those emails to tell you, I've been watching your stuff for such a long time and now I've passed my exams and it's changed my life. And that's amazing. You can't get better than that.
And I think it's sometimes, I'm sure you'll agree, very hard to grasp how many people are watching, especially I think on a podcast. I think you're a bit newer to podcasting, aren't you? But there's much less interaction. So people can go to your email or they can go to YouTube, but there's no comments on a podcast. So you can see how many people listen and download, but you don't really get an idea of how it's affecting them unless they actually email you. And when you consider the numbers that are watching, it's quite, I don't know, overwhelming. It's quite a lot to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we get a little bit numb to it, actually. I think we forget because, so my podcast, I am new. I think I've only done 10 episodes, maybe a few more. And I love podcasting, but I do miss that interaction from the audience. Luckily, I have quite a close connection to my course students. And so I always direct them to my podcast and then say, what did you think? Please be honest. And so I do get some feedback from them. Although I think they're a bit biased. So they always give me good feedback. But I think so far I've had like 10,000 listeners have downloaded my podcast. And that's a huge amount. But, you know, when you've been doing this for a long time, you go, 10,000, you know. But actually, if you think about 10,000 people all in one space, that's a huge amount of people that are listening to what you have to say. Yeah, that makes me blush a little bit. Oh,
it's bigger than the entire town I'm living in now, that many people.
Really?
And it's amazing to think about all these people here in that one place. That's incredible. But as you said, I guess you're standard gets higher. Like if you have one video that gets 20,000 views, 10,000, it's like, okay. You kind of get used to it, even though you shouldn't, because the number is still big. It's just your standard changes, which is a shame. Absolutely. You have to keep reminding yourself, don't you?
Yeah, and it's all relative. I started a new YouTube channel about a year ago just for short content because I wasn't sure if shorts should live on my main YouTube channel or not. Mm-hmm. And when you start a new channel, obviously you're still getting just a few hundred views, if that, you know. And so for that channel, if I got 1,000 views, I'd be like, wow, well, that one did really well. But it's relative to that particular channel and the kind of views that those videos get.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, though. Like, for anything in life, whether it is for content creation or language learning, how good you feel about yourself depends who you compare it to. And I always like to say on my podcast, it's best to compare only with yourself in the past.
Yeah.
You know, think about how good you were at English last year and now compared to this year. And I think that's the most healthy comparison, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because only you have your unique set of circumstances. So comparing yourself to anybody else is not a fair comparison, because they will, even if they are similar. So we could take, you could take you and I, for example, you know, we're both doing English teaching on a podcast, but we don't have the same anything. You have a different level of experience. You've been doing it for a different amount of time. You're a man, I'm a woman. You know, everything is different. And so comparing us, like comparing how many downloads I get compared to you, would be an unfair comparison. So you're absolutely right. You only should compare yourself to yourself. And always I say to people, don't be too hard on yourself. It's not worth it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, before we were speaking about what you like about your work, and now maybe we can move on to the more general topic of what you like. So I thought I would ask you some questions about what you're into, and also I'm going to try to use some of these good phrases maybe to help expand the viewers and listeners' vocabulary, rather than always saying like. So like, what are you into? It means the same thing,
okay,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe you could tell me a little bit about what you're into in terms of hobbies, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, of course. So I've always been into being quite physical, so into sports, and more recently, well, in recent years, I've been into squash and gymnastics. Gymnastics piqued my interest kind of accidentally. I had this promise or this kind of deal with myself, this is when I was still acting, that if I got an acting job that would take more than a month, so if I was in the theatre for 3 months on a job or something, then I would try to learn a new skill, and the skill would depend on someone already in the cast. So I'd have to see what the cast were doing and find out what skills they had and then use them as inspiration. So for example, on one show, there was a chap who had a Rubik's cube, the little color cube that you have to solve. And he was fantastic at solving this thing over and over again. And I said, okay, that's my skill. That's what I'm going to learn. So he taught me how to solve a Rubik's cube. And that was great, because you do that kind of thing on the train and people are like, wow, it sparks a conversation. And then on one show, someone was a really great roller skater. It was part of the actual show. They brought in people who could do that skill. And so I thought, well, I'm going to buy myself a pair of roller skates and I'm going to learn to skate. So that's what I did. And then there was one show over the summer where the dancers were doing some kind of tricks. One chap did some back flips, where you jump from your feet to your hands backwards and then back onto your feet. So he was doing multiple backflips all the way across the lawn. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's going to be my skill. I'm going to learn how to do a backflip. So that was my kind of challenge for that show. And he said, sure, I'll teach you. But we were working on concrete floors. And I thought, if I do this wrong, I'm going to break my neck. This is not like roller skating where I just scuff my arms and knees. I need to do this safely. So I had a look online to see if there are any gymnastic classes for adults. And sure enough, there are loads. As long as you're near a city, then there's going to be gymnastic centers, and usually an opportunity for adults to go along and have a class. And so I went to a class near me, and I think it was 2 weeks, and I was doing a backflip, obviously on the really bouncy surfaces. It wasn't just on the floor. and it was assisted a little bit, but I managed to do it. And I was like, do you know what? I really love this, because it was challenging, but also really exciting. And you watch some of these gymnasts and it's like they can fly. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to do more of this. And so I took on gymnastics in my mid-30s, and I went all the way up to competing. I did the national competitions about 4 years after that.
Amazing.
And I haven't been able to go back since having my second child. Unfortunately, I had problems with my knees. But my other love, besides gymnastics, I'm really into squash.
Yeah, I've never done squash or gymnastics, come to think of it. But
have you ever played any racket sports at all?
Well, like tennis, badminton. I play badminton from time to time.
Yeah.
Is squash a British thing? I'm not sure.
I think squash, I have a feeling. Well, so Henry VIII used to play squash because he has squash courts in Hampton Court Palace.
Wow, I had no idea it was that old.
Yeah, and so I think squash as an idea has been around for a long time, as a sport has been around for a long time. I mean, don't quote me on that. I'm almost certain that
Henry VIII
did play some form of squash. Although I wouldn't be surprised if it has a French origin, to be honest.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. I'm just wondering if there might be some people who don't know what squash is. I mean, I'm not super, I have the rough idea, but can you explain how you play, basically?
Of course. So squash is a racket sport where there are typically two players inside. So the court is surrounded. You've got walls all around you. So you're inside a room, a court, and you both face the front wall. So the idea is that you hit the ball against the wall in front of you, and then the other player has to then hit it back. So it always has to hit the wall before the other player then returns the shot. And you can knock the ball off all the surfaces, all the walls. You can't hit it off the ceiling or the floor, but you can bounce it across all the walls as long as it hits the front wall before the next player comes in to hit it. And it's because of this, you know, very small ball that goes very fast. It's a very fast game. The difference between squash and tennis for me when I was learning was that I spent more time picking the ball up in tennis, going, having to find the ball, you know, it goes a long way. You can serve it out very quickly. And I found tennis very hard, but squash, you can pick it up quite quickly. It's got a slow learn, a fast, what do you call it? Tennis has a steep learning curve. It's a long, mm-hmm. You have to learn a lot before you can play at a decent level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas squash, you can kind of get going straight away. Even if you're not very good, a beginner can have a decent game. Yeah. So tennis has a steep learning curve. It's harder, faster. No.
I guess there's no opposite to steep learning curve, is there? I don't think I've heard that before.
Yeah, there's not an opposite, is there?
Just anyway, easy to learn. Yes. Okay, that's good to know. Maybe I'll give it a go one day. But I see it kind of like tennis, but instead of having two opponents, you just have a wall instead. That's like a very simple way to put it, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So the wall is technically your net. You don't hit it over a net like you do with the other racket sports. You hit it against the wall. That's mm-hmm. the only difference. But squash is very hard on your knees and your back. And that's why some people will avoid it, especially if they've done a lot of sports in their lives and they've picked up injuries like dodgy knees, bad backs.
Mm-hmm.
I love the word dodgy. Dodgy knee.
dodgy knees, not healthy knees. I don't know how I would describe dodgy.
Yeah, if something's dodgy, it's not quite right, is it?
Mm.
So a dodgy knee is something that can't be trusted, a knee that can't be trusted. Yeah. You can't rely on it.
My friends call me dodgy sometimes, yeah.
Squash can be dodgy. No, not dodgy. Dangerous. Squash can be dangerous. The ball is about the size of an eye socket.
Okay.
And so
interesting comparison.
Well, it's because the ball, if it actually hits you in the eye, it can damage your eye. It can blind you.
Hmm.
So lots of players are encouraged, and young players have to wear special glasses when they're on court to protect their eyes from the ball. I don't wear glasses because I don't like the experience, but I should.
Have you ever had a face hit before with the ball?
Yeah, I've actually, I don't think you can see it because of the light, but well, you can a little bit. I've got a little Harry Potter scar right under my finger there, if you're watching the video. And that's from the butt of a racket. So I ran on, I was playing doubles, which is more dangerous because there's four people on the court. It's not any bigger. It's the same size court and there's four people. And they're all trying to hack at the ball. And this one chap went to do a volley where he lifts his racket up over his head, the same as you would in badminton or in tennis when you try and whack the ball down hard and of steep, on a steep angle. So he came to volley the ball down and I was ducking under him to try and get forward and I didn't see what he was doing and the butt of the racket hit me in the forehead and split my forehead open.
Ooh, nasty.
Yeah, it was one of those, it was really stinging. I said, I think I'm okay. And then they all looked at me and went, no, I think
gushing blood.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess the shock is still with you. Wow. So I didn't really realize before it's much more of an extreme sport than I imagined, right? There's injuries, there's eye problems, there's knee problems.
Yeah. Well, the knee problems is about the twisting because you're
sure.
Kind of running around the court fast, you have to twist quickly and lunge and twist and lunge and twist. So it can be quite testing. Mm-hmm. It can test your joints very much. And what I found was when I was doing gymnastics and squash together, I found they really complemented each other very well because gymnastics gives you a level of core strength that you just don't get in anything else. I would never be as strong just going to the gym as I was when I was doing regular gymnastics because you just have to be so strong in your core to be able to perform the kind of tumbling routines. And if you like, you watch gymnasts, they are incredible what they can do. And then the squash, I would find that because I had the core strength, it protected my joints and the squash gave me the cardiovascular workout. So I'd get out of breath, my heart rate would rise and I'd be really sweaty. And so they complemented each other nicely because squash got me fit and gymnastics helped me to become strong.
Mm. Very nice. Okay. That's, I guess it's a nice idea to have two hobbies or sports that can complement each other well. I guess for me, it's been a bit similar. So recently, let me use another expression. Let me say I've been quite fond of bouldering, which is like indoor climbing, right? And that's been really fun, but it can be quite a lot on your arms and your leg muscles. It's quite a lot of holding yourself upside down and that kind of stuff. But as well as that, I've been doing yoga for many years. So again, I think these two are quite complementary. They go together well because I've got like sore muscles one day, then the next day I'll do some stretches and it feels great. So I suppose it's nice to find these two things that work well together.
Yeah. With the yoga, do you do very much more like the stretching yoga or do you ever do power yoga, which is kind of designed to help you, you know, to get strong and build those muscles?
Yeah, I think I do both. I just listen to how I'm feeling. Like if my muscles are sore, it'll be more like restorative and relaxing. But if I'm feeling like healthy and ready, I'll do something a bit harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I always found with the bouldering as well, when you start out, the skin on your hands, if you aren't used to bouldering or working with your hands, I used to find that my skin would blister and sometimes tear with bouldering because you're gripping on and those can be quite abrasive, the holds, can't they? Like
definitely.
Sandpaper sometimes.
I laughed because I have that right now, like skin peeling. And my friend had a really bad one where he jumped off and all of the skin on his fingers was like peeling off like a, I don't know, like an orange.
Oh God, it takes so long to heal as well. And when it's your hands, you have to use your hands all the time. Oh,
you can't.
I haven't been climbing for such a long time, but it was another one of those sports. I think when something's slightly extreme, I consider it slightly extreme because you scare yourself. And there are places, you know, if you're doing something where there's an overhang, you can be dangling from quite high up and you potentially could hurt yourself. With bouldering, I always worry if you slide down the wall about like catching yourself as you go down, you know.
Yeah, I think always you've got to make sure to take off any rings and jewelry because I could get caught, and I've heard of horrible accidents I won't get into now, but yeah, you can imagine
Yeah, we have a climbing center near us, and there was recently there was a chap who, on the actual the big climbing walls, the ones that you have to clip into ropes, mm-hmm. and you either have someone belaying, or you can go on the auto belay system.
So to belay is like to help you go. Someone, I don't know how you describe it, help you go up and down with a rope.
Yeah, so it's someone who's holding onto the other end of the rope, isn't it? So yeah. As you're climbing, the person who is belaying will pull in the rope and keep the rope tight. So if you were to slip and fall off the wall, they hold you on the rope so that you're always safe. An auto belay is when you're climbing on your own and you don't have someone to hold the ropes for you. So you clip into this, what I always think of as a seatbelt almost. It has this kind of mechanism like a seatbelt has. So it's loose, you clip into it, and as you go up, it draws in like a seatbelt would. When you take off a seatbelt, it automatically draws in. And then if you do a quick, sudden movement, like you fall, or in a car if you have an impact, then it goes tight and it holds so that it won't all let out and allow mm-hmm. you to fall. There was a chap recently at my climbing center who put his auto belay on but didn't do it properly. He climbed all the way to the top. And normally what you do when you're used to climbing is at the top of an auto belay, you just jump off. You just jump back off the wall and it slowly lets you down. He hadn't clipped in properly, so he jumped off and he just fell. He was fine. Wow. Luckily, he was okay. But I do not know how he was okay, because we're talking, I mean, I don't even know how high, 10 meters, is that, does that sound?
Yeah. Is it like a house, 10 meters maybe? High. I don't know how big a house is.
Absolutely. Yeah, higher. House. Higher. To, yeah, maybe the very top of a two-story wow. house. I mean, it's a long way to fall. And yeah. the floors, they're soft, but they're not that soft.
Yeah. That's so scary. I think people get complacent. They get comfortable with the danger. You've got to be aware of what you're doing, I guess, no matter what it is. But yeah. I wanted to ask you, what really stood out to me from what you were saying before is how, well, the phrase that came to my mind was serial hobbyist. You know, you seem to have done many hobbies, basically. And your method of finding them was very interesting in how you saw what people did around you and just kind of copied them and saw what stuck, like what you enjoyed. And it sounds like you've got two things now that have stuck for a while. I just think it's an interesting way to go about getting hobbies. I think people often wait to find something they're interested in and they don't actually make the effort to try new things, which, speaking for myself as well, we often forget that, don't we?
Yeah, I think the way I came around to this idea of continuing to challenge myself, because I actually had a YouTube channel called, I don't really post there anymore, but it was called Anna's Big Adventure. And initially it was me kind of showing me doing different things, trying whitewater rafting, trying climbing. And so I used social media as a way to hold me to account. You know, I have to keep trying new things, because if I'm brave enough to try it, maybe other people will be, you know, always wanting to inspire people. But I came around to this idea initially because children have this amazing opportunity to try lots of things. As kids, we, you know, every child has a different set of circumstances. Some have more opportunities than others, unfortunately. But generally, they get access to a lot of different things, different sports, different hobbies. They can try different things. And what they like, they will take on into adulthood. As adults, we stop looking. We stop trying new things. We feel embarrassed. Someone invited me to a netball tournament. They needed someone to stand in for a player. And I've not played netball since I was at school. And I felt a little bit embarrassed. I thought, well, I can't even remember the rules. It's like we think as adults, if we're not good at something, then we can no longer try it. Mm-hmm. Like we're not allowed to be beginners at anything again, which I think is silly. We should just be open to new experiences, because I think that's what keeps us young, you know, continuing to scare ourselves and grow and discover. And that also comes with the benefit of finding new people and new communities, which again keeps us young. You know, going into a very morbid direction, one of the biggest killers of older people is loneliness. Being lonely has a really big impact that is not talked about very often. So growing a community and friendship groups can be achieved very easily by trying different activities and different hobbies.
It's so important, isn't it? I totally agree. I mean, even myself, like bouldering is more of a recent thing I've taken up. And sometimes I feel like, oh, everyone is so good here. Like people are upside down, holding on with two fingers. It's amazing. Yeah. And there's me falling off the most simple ones. But then I just kind of have to like laugh at myself and remember I'm here for fun. It's not about who's best. And then when I do kind of show that childlike almost attitude, this like fun, yeah, it's not a big deal, not so serious attitude, then other people actually come and say hi. They even help me. Like the other day I had someone giving me pointers on how to do it and improving my skill even more. So it's a good way to make friends as well, doing these hobbies.
Yeah, absolutely. Climbing is great as well. I think you can literally just go over to someone and be like, oh, that was really great. How did mm-hmm. you do that? Or, you know, it's a really great environment to just approach people.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's another thing that as adults we don't do. I love watching my young children. My boys are 4 and 2. And I love how they will just go into a room full of strangers and just walk up to people and just talk.
Hi, do you want to be my friend?
It's a skill that we lose as adults. We become, you know, I don't know. It's like we regress socially. We become frightened to approach people. Or maybe it's a British thing, but on the trains, the idea of looking at someone, giving someone eye contact, that's almost considered confrontational, isn't it? What you're looking at? What? I think we can learn a lot from children and how children interact.
I feel like children don't have much of a sense of self. Like they don't really, you know, I'm trying to think back to when I was very young as well. Like I don't remember being self-conscious. I would just go up to people and it would be all about interacting with the world and not so much about how they see me. And I think when you become an adult, you start to think more about how is this going to make me look? It's all about my image, which
yeah,
I say is usually not a good thing. Yeah. Well, would you say that you're passionate, this word passion, about squash or gymnastics? Would you say any of them have developed beyond an interest into a passion?
Yeah, definitely. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. I think it's the people more than anything. And so we keep talking about moving away from the area that we currently live in. And this is probably the longest I've lived in one area in my entire life, because I've been a bit of a nomad, moved around a lot. But I've been here now for on and off maybe 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, you know, involved with the same squash club and the same group of people. And they're a mix of ages as well. You know, one of my favorite people at the squash club is 81. And so you've got really young people playing with teenagers, as well as lots of older people who are retired and can play during the day. Mm-hmm. So I've built this community here and I'm so passionate about playing. I want to be good and I'm enjoying improving, but I'm also passionate about the community that comes with that game. And so the idea of moving away whenever my partner suggests different areas that are a long way from where we are, then I'm like, the first thing I think of is my squash club. And that is not silly.
Oh, nice.
Like we could have an amazing life somewhere where it's more affordable to live. And my children could go to amazing schools, but my squash club, you know, I will have to make the sacrifice at some point, but that is, for me, it would be a huge sacrifice because I feel so passionate about that particular group of people.
It's nice that you emphasize the people, I think, not just doing it alone. That wouldn't perhaps be quite the same, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. but the people, the community is very important. That's a nice thing to focus on there. Well, maybe just to finish our chat around this topic today, again, putting you on the spot one last time, apologize, but do you have any advice for people who might want to find a passion? You know, maybe there's someone out there who they don't have a passion. They would like English to be their passion, perhaps, but it's not. They're trying to force it. I don't know. I'm guessing. But what tips do you have for people for finding a passion of their own?
Yeah. Okay. So I think one of the first things is it's always good to have someone to do it with. So one of the first things you could do is ask around, ask your friends. They don't have to be close friends, because I'm sure you know what your best friend does. They probably do all the same things that you do, but ask some of your friends or people that you maybe wouldn't consider a friend, but you kind of speak on a regular basis. Like if you go and pick up your children from school and there's another mum who you see there waiting, or a dad waiting at the gates, and you chat often, that you're not friends, but you know, you're acquaintances, then maybe ask them, you know, well, what do you do for fun? You know, do you go to the gym or anything? And if they suggest something that you think might be interesting, oh, I play a bit of rugby, or I do go-karting, they, oh, that sounds interesting, is that something I could get involved with? And see if you can, you know, buddy up with someone. So get a friend who already does something and go and, you know, let them take you under their wing and do it with them, because I think it feels safer when there's someone who already knows the ropes to take you to a club, to take you in and tell everyone that you're new and introduce you and show you how things work, rather than just going on your own as a complete newbie. It can be a little bit daunting. So always try and find out what other people are doing and see if you can go along with them. And then the internet is a great place. You might not even have a clue about some of the wonderful things that are going on in your local area, because there's usually clubs and organizations and you know, all sorts of people getting together doing different things, you know, like a choir. You know, most communities will have a local choir that you can mm-hmm. go and join, or knitting clubs, or all sorts of things, people making models and painting models, and there's all sorts of things you can do. You just need to look around. So another option is to kind of go to your like a YMCA. There's usually like local community spaces, whether it's a church or like local charities, places where people can go and ask for help and advice. And just ask, are there any clubs that you know of? What's going on? Anything interesting? It's just about finding it, and then I'd always say give it some time as well. Mm-hmm. Like, don't just go once and go, oh, it's not for me. Give it some time, because I think the first time you do something, it's all so unfamiliar that you might just see that as being a negative. Like, oh, right, it's not familiar to me. I don't know these people. I don't know this place. I don't like it. If you just give it some time, you might come around to enjoy it a bit more, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because I find often the first time you do something, you kind of, well, even before doing it, you kind of assume, no, that's not for me. Like, another thing that I'm really into is longboarding. It's like skateboarding, but longer. And I always thought when I was younger, nah, that's for like the cool kids. That's not for me. I couldn't do that. And you have this like story in your head of what you can and cannot do. But then I tried it one day and I really began to develop that passion for doing that as well. So yeah, I think to follow on from what you said, and based on what you said before, another tip I would give is just try as many things as you can and see what sticks. I think doing that with other people is always going to be a good solution.
What's the difference between longboarding and just skateboarding? I know it's longer, but what's the like the experience difference?
Very, very simply, skateboards are for tricks. Like, you go to a skate park and ramps. Longboard is more for like travel. So people use it to commute. People use it to go long distances. The wheels are bigger and smoother as well. And also some people use it for like downhill sport, like really fast. So longboards go faster than skateboards as well.
Wow.
But I don't do
That's
that.
A bit scary. Do you do snowboarding?
No, I've always wanted to, but, you know, I'd have to go somewhere else to do it. I don't know where I would go, and it's expensive.
Yeah, it is expensive, because I snowboard, but I when I think of skateboards or the idea of longboarding, it scares me. But it's weird because I snowboard, but when you fall off a snowboard, it's not painful. I think if you fell off I have fallen off a skateboard a few times and it really hurts.
Yeah, it can, but I guess the longer, the bigger the board, the more stable you are. So if you're thinking about it, but you're nervous, just get a massive board. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. I guess we'll leave it here today then. But thank you for your time. But before we go, could you give the listeners another reminder where they could find you if they want to know more about you?
Yeah, sure. So I think on any of the platforms that you like to spend your time consuming content, if you looked for English Like a Native, then you'd find me. I'd really appreciate any podcast listeners to come and check out my podcast, which is simply The English Like a Native Podcast. Give me some support and reach out to me with feedback. That would be really, really appreciated.
I'm sure you'll get a lot now because we have many people, of course, here who like podcasts. Hopefully they do anyway. So yeah, I'll put all the links to them in the description of this podcast so people can find it quite easily. But yeah, well, thank you very much. It's been so great to chat with you. Really enjoyed it. And I will hopefully see you again.
Yeah, well, next time I'm in Cornwall, let's have a game of squash.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, you have to teach me with my bad knees. You have been listening to the Level Up English podcast. If you would like to leave a question to be answered on a future episode, then please go to levelupenglish.school/podcast. That's levelupenglish.school/podcast. And I'll answer your question on a future episode. Thanks for listening.